This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 78, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases, and other related events. And every Thursday I release an episode of the Past Lives Podcast that's called Paranormal Stories, and that has UFO cases as well as information on evidence of an afterlife. If you want to hear the extended version of this episode, you'll need to join the Patreon campaign, where there are now over 70 episodes in the back catalogue. For $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week, and for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. And this week, I'm talking to Paul Blake Smith. It's about his book. It's called The Nixon-Gleason Alien Encounter, an investigation into Nixon's secret airbase meetings to view extraterrestrials. Paul has written 6 published books, including the recent bestseller, President Eisenhower's Close Encounters, and MO41, The Bombshell Before Roswell. Hi, Paul. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
So we're going to be talking about your book. It's called The Nixon-Gleason Alien Encounter, an investigation into Nixon's secret meetings with extraterrestrials. So this was a kind of rumor that was going around for years, wasn't it?
That's right. And some people with a bit of a creative flair and a notorious background for fudging the truth have kind of gummed up the works with this story. So I cut it to the bone, cut away the fat, and I feel that the story is very likely true. But I try to separate fact from fiction in my book and give a lot of sources and resources, and I pack a lot of information in there to make sure readers get their money's worth.
This is about Richard Nixon, who was president at the time, but he was also vice president to Eisenhower, wasn't he?
That's right. Eisenhower served for 8 years with Nixon as his vice president. I'm not all that clear on how well they got along. I don't think they were close, but they kept in touch. Even when Eisenhower grew ill and was hospitalized in Washington in 1969, where he died, Nixon would visit him and speak to him over the phone. That was just as Nixon was taking office in 69. And one of the stories in my book was apparently there was a UFO sighting over the White House during that first year of the administration, and that Nixon ordered an investigation. The object was said to have been a bit football-shaped and had a reddish glow to the underside, and that he ordered his people, "I want to know all about this," and they couldn't come back with much. They couldn't capture it on film. They couldn't capture it literally, and it just hovered for a little while over the White House and took off, almost as if they were sending him a message.
Yeah, it's interesting. And there's a lot of talk about Eisenhower and his involvement with UFOs.
Right. I wrote President Eisenhower's Close Encounters, and it did quite well. You can still get it on Amazon. And Amazon even promoted it in England as one of their top favorites for people to read. Hopefully you get a copy of that. But in it, I talk about President Eisenhower went in 1954 to Palm Springs, California, to go on a golf vacation. Now, that's 2,700 miles away from the White House, a long way to go. So that was apparently the cover story for during this visit. A number of sources have seriously alleged that he ducked away from his golf outing one night and flew to nearby Edwards Air Force Base and met with some friendly human-like aliens that had landed that afternoon. The aliens were said to have come down in 5 different ships, 3 circular, 2 elongated, and they stepped out and spoke English and met a kind of welcoming committee or airbase officials, and they found them to be quite friendly and harmless, so they called the president, and he agreed to come over. And he did talk to them in English. It's an astounding story, and it's been largely hushed up, but bits and pieces did leak out in 1954, and it was in a couple of books that year, and a radio broadcaster named Frank Edwards, who was very famous at the time, broadcast that spring the story, and he soon found himself fired. which tells you about the way the government then and maybe today can lean on media sources to keep this kind of thing hushed up.
And do you feel that Eisenhower talked to Richard Nixon about this, or that Richard Nixon was kept out of the loop, so to speak?
I think Nixon was out of the loop at first. Only in the second term, I believe, that Nixon was informed and briefed on all of this. Eisenhower didn't know him well and thought he was a little immature, and that he was impressed over the years of the first term that Nixon grew into the job. So also Eisenhower may have felt he had no choice, because Nixon was the obvious answer for the standard bearer of the party in the next election. In 1960, he was the favorite to beat John F. Kennedy. Of course, that didn't go Nixon's way. But Eisenhower thought Nixon's going to be president, so he did have a briefing. And that's even according to an eyewitness. I put it in my book. A gentleman who wished to speak out anonymously said, "I worked for the military intelligence and a little for the CIA, and I was called in to give a briefing to both Eisenhower and Nixon during their second term," I think he was saying, and that Nixon stood there or sat there at the meeting kind of aghast, he doesn't know a lot of this beforehand. And so he got an education at that top secret classified meeting about alien visitation and supposedly some landings at an airbase in Nevada, and that Eisenhower took it calmly and asked simple questions, and that this helped prepare Nixon for what they felt was his imminent ascension to the White House. Of course, that did not happen for eight more years, but he made it.
Do you feel that all the presidents get a briefing, or they pick and choose who they can trust?
I think all presidents from Roosevelt to at least Reagan were briefed. Some maybe a little more than others. But since then, I'm not so sure they're told all that much. The government really likes to keep the lid on this secret. And occasionally you see a whistleblower step forward, like Mr. David C. Grush lately in the news, telling that he believes that we have had communication with friendly aliens and that an agreement was reached. And that's precisely what I wrote about in my Eisenhower book, that Eisenhower did come to a treaty agreement with these friendly aliens and asked them to kind of stay aloof, stay out of our major cities, and don't touch off a panic that would damage the economy and upset the Wall Street stock market. They didn't want a repeat of the Great Depression. That weighed heavily on people's minds back in the 40s and 50s and 60s. People who remembered the economic disaster in America that spread like a wildfire around the world. Another factor would have been here in America, the 1938 pre-Halloween broadcast of the radio play War of the Worlds by British author H.G. Wells. It was put on by Orson Welles, and people thought that this was the real deal, that it was a radio play about an alien invasion in America. And some people panicked and grabbed their guns and went searching for aliens in the middle of the night in 1938. So I'm sure the American government wanted to avoid this kind of social disorder, if not mass panic. And that's another reason why then, maybe to this day, they keep the lid on the story of alien visitation to this world and certainly to our country.
So if Eisenhower made an agreement with them that they wouldn't interfere with society and really show themselves, was it an agreement where the aliens then said, okay, we'll do that for you, what are you going to do for us?
Exactly. And what they asked for was to have a base in America, and it turned out to be in Nevada, to come and go as a kind of science lab to study specimens and samples and things that we would give them. We would provide them, and they would provide things for us. Now, my source for that is a 2017 leaked document from the Defense Intelligence Agency. You've probably seen it on the internet, but I have it in my book. It's from January 1989, and it describes, yes, aliens are visiting here. And it mentions that, yes, Eisenhower met with them three times and set up this air base in Nevada during the 1950s, where they could land peacefully out in the desert and not be seen by anyone. And we would provide some things for them, and they would provide things for us. And meanwhile, keep themselves on the down low, that they wouldn't do any landing and stepping forward and trying to speak to people that might set off a panic. And I think American presidents from Eisenhower on up to maybe Reagan were aware of this agreement and what it implied, or all that went on in secret out there, but it wasn't something they could tell the American public. To this day, on talk shows in America, former presidents Clinton, Bush, Obama, they go on these programs and they're asked about UFOs and they give a flippant answer. They grin and say something silly. They won't give you a straight answer. When they're pressed, I think one of them said, well, it's a matter of national security. I can't really talk about that. So I do think presidents are briefed a little bit to this day, but probably not as much in Eisenhower and Nixon's time.
And I did hear a rumor that maybe Eisenhower agreed that the ETs could abduct some people, but to keep the numbers low.
That is apparently a real substantial rumor. I can't absolutely confirm it, but they apparently, at least the friendly human-like race, wanted plant and animal specimens to look over, and they wanted to look over people. And I don't think Eisenhower was too thrilled. But according to a man named Don Phillips, who worked for an aviation company called Skunk Works, they had a lot of government contracts. Mr. Phillips said, I was allowed to read a secret report at one point, and it said, to his astonishment, Eisenhower met with extraterrestrial beings and said to them, well, how can we stop you? You are so advanced. And that he did make certain concessions that you were allowing, or he was allowing, the friendly aliens to look us over as long as they kept records of everything. Well, here comes the complication. This recent whistleblower, David Grush, says it's his understanding that there are at least 12 different races, I think. I'll take that back. It was Don Phillips who said this, that there are 12 different races coming to our planet. And if you make an agreement with one, others could try to take advantage of that agreement and start rather ruthlessly abducting us and looking us over and maybe even planting a tracking chip or something and putting us back. So it gets a little like Pandora's box. You open it up and there's other beings coming here besides the friendly human-like ones. So they may not be the ones who are abducting, as we read and hear of so many stories, that they're often these little gray beings that are creepy looking. And that's not what President Eisenhower was described as meeting. According to an eyewitness, a United States Air Force test pilot, he said, I was called to that meeting in 54, and I saw and met Eisenhower, and he was surrounded by six bodyguards, and he spoke in English to these friendly aliens, and that they put on an air show for us out at Edwards Air Force Base out in the desert. And Eisenhower was almost too impressed that they could do far more things with their craft than we can do with our jet planes and helicopters. So Eisenhower kind of asked them, could you keep aloof? And they wanted an agreement, and they reached one over the next year or so. So it's just, I know, a little astounding for people to hear this. But I put together so many angles of the story, so much circumstantial evidence that I feel it's true. And I'm getting a lot of hundreds of good reviews on Amazon where people are becoming convinced as well when they read the book. So I think Nixon knew all about this, and he rather repeated the process. I found 10 similarities between Eisenhower's meeting with aliens in 54 and what Nixon undertook in at the same time frame in February of 73.
I think you said in the book that Eisenhower assigned a Vice President Nixon to investigate the military's cases of aliens.
I did not say that, but that certainly could be true. What Nixon knew was a little fuzzy, and he never spoke up. According to a biographer that worked with Nixon on his autobiography, He brought up the subject of extraterrestrials, and Nixon just kind of raised his eyebrows and said nothing. And that's unique in itself, because Nixon had an opinion on almost everything, and he refused to speak. He may have been heavily involved in that topic by the end of the Eisenhower administration.
And you said that the ETs that Eisenhower met were very human-like. And skeptics might say, well, if they're from another planet, evolution would have been completely different. There's no way they would have looked human.
Recently, I've been seeing in the news stories you can look up online that cosmologists and scientists are saying now that they feel it's very logical and reasonable to speculate there are many other planet Earths in the cosmos, and that they have also given rise to a human-like species. There could be many human races with various differences. According to that test pilot at Edwards Air Force Base, he said the aliens looked somewhat like us, only slightly misshapen. And I'm thinking they might have had wider nostrils or larger lungs, chest, or diaphragm for breathing our atmosphere, a slightly different skin tone. And that was described in a government document leaked some years ago from 1954. Called the Army Special Manual 101, in which it said four different races, at least that we know of, are visiting here, and one are very human-like, and said that they had a slightly different skin tone, and they only had a little fuzz at the top of their head instead of hair like we do. So that's probably information that was derived from the Eisenhower encounter of February 19th, 1954.
So that was, you say, was it like a normal training manual for officers?
Right. To cover it up, to find crashes, to box up debris. This manual was for intelligence officers, how to handle bodies, how not to get sick from radioactivity, how to browbeat the local population into saying that they saw nothing, make sure that the media did not get the story, and don't let the radio men and TV men and authors near any of these stories and try to discredit them. It's a rather shocking manual. I recommend it to anyone. You certainly can find it, I think, online. Look for a Ryan S. Wood book called Magic Eyes Only, which has it reprinted entirely, along with many crashes. It's a book that was ahead of its time, printed, I think, around 2006 or 7. And I recommend that and Ryan's website, majesticdocuments.com.
And so can I ask about a guy, they called him, is it Cooper Stein? And he was out at Area 51.
Right. That's the source for Linda Moulton Howe. And she spoke to me about him, who met with Eisenhower and Nixon and held that secret meeting in Washington and briefed them both on the time he went out to Nevada for himself, and said that he got a kind of a glance or a look, probably more than a glance, at an actual extraterrestrial in this airbase. I don't remember him giving much of a description, but Eisenhower wanted to know what the heck is going on out there. He was losing control of the case, you might say. The CIA had been operating this airbase almost with impunity, thanks to national security secrecy codes. They can pretty much do whatever they want out there, and Eisenhower's curious, what's going on? So he sent this man known as Cooper Stein, a pseudonym, to go out there and report back. So it's an enticing story, but it does fit with that 1989 Defense Intelligence Agency document that says this airbase was set up in rural Nevada, out west, so that aliens could come and go as they please and not be harmed by local citizens or maybe shot at by the military, and that they could conduct experiments on plants and animals and such and learn scientifically. I don't think there was anything nefarious going on, like some monstrous project to control the Earth or attack humanity. I find that kind of silly.
And this is where we have somewhere called S4, don't we? But has S4 been confirmed? Do the military say, yeah, we got a place called S4?
I don't think they've ever officially announced this, but you've heard of the case of Bob Lazar, the scientist from America who worked there and said, yes, I've seen the craft. We had several. He worked on one. He described the propulsion system and the element 115, I think it was, that was unknown at the time Mr. Lazar said so. And now since then, it has been discovered as he described. He said he did not really see any aliens, but he was allowed to read a briefing book, and it had photos of dead aliens in it that had been recovered from a crash somewhere. So I don't find anything that Bob Lazar said to be outrageous or a lie. I can't really disprove his story. He has been approached, he said, a number of times by Hollywood producers who want to buy his story and change it into some wild alien invasion movie, and he refuses to sell out. And I think that tells you something about Mr. Lazar's integrity. He doesn't want his real life experience tainted or soiled in this way. I don't think he's cashed in much at all. And he lives a quiet life. He doesn't seem to even like attention. So you can make of his claim what you will. We're all entitled to our opinion. But I'm beginning to wonder if he wasn't telling the whole truth right from the start.
Well, it would be interesting to see a movie that did just show what he talks about. That would still be exciting, wouldn't it?
If they would just leave it at that, his real life story would be interesting. But they want to jazz it up with, like, maybe man-eating aliens or sexuality or something like that that had nothing to do with his experience. Because I guess Hollywood feels that they've got to get young people to watch, and there's got to be sex and violence and nudity and car crashes and such. And that's a shame.
Yeah, it almost sounds like the 1950s B-movies.
Yeah, a little bit. Certainly a couple of them came out just before the Eisenhower encounter of February 54. And I find The Day the Earth Stood Still to be a really solid movie about an aircraft or spacecraft that lands in Washington, D.C., and aliens friendly, speaking English, stepped out to talk to humanity, and things got complicated from there. I don't think that had any impact at all on Eisenhower and what happened in real life, because there was other stories of crashes and recoveries going back as far as 1941 in my own hometown of Cape Girardeau, Missouri.
So the book is titled The Nixon-Gleason Alien Encounter. So what about Jackie Gleason? How would you characterize his interest in UFOs?
Over the top. He was obsessed with this story. He collected over 1,700 books on the paranormal, heavy on UFOs and ETs, in his lifetime, and you can still read them in a special reading room at the University of Miami. Now, Jackie not only obsessed over this privately, he would call up UFO authors and quiz them intently on the cases that they were writing about. And sometimes he would call up the people who had the sightings. He wanted to know every last detail. Meanwhile, Jackie would call a radio show in New York City that was on in the middle of the night, the Long John Nabel Show, and chime in all about UFOs and ETs. And you can hear some of the recordings on the internet, although the sound quality is poor. Jackie didn't believe everything he heard, to his credit, but he was most knowledgeable, and he made up to $14 million a year. So he spent maybe close to $1 million on building his own UFO house, overlooking a valley in Peekskill, New York, just outside of New York City. It was a roundhouse with big bay windows, and he filled it with telescopes for studying the sky to see if he could see a real UFO. And he had a Nikola Tesla device that he felt was once used to try to contact aliens. Jackie was just way over the top on this subject. And apparently one of his guests when the house was finished in 1959 was Richard Nixon. So their friendship goes back a ways. The two golfed in Florida many times where Jackie moved in 1964. They loved golfing, and they were both Republicans, so they became good friends. And I'm sure Mr. Nixon badgered Mr. Nixon over and over to find out what does the government have on this, and Nixon wouldn't tell him for the longest time.
Did Jackie Gleason ever see a UFO?
Apparently, aside from what he apparently saw in Homestead Air Base in South Florida, he may have had a sighting on a beach. He gave one interview, I think in the early 70s, said he saw one while walking along a beach in Florida. So that in the 1950s, he gave an interview with TV Guide and admitted that he was very interested in UFOs, but he had never seen one. But he had something special that a lot of people didn't have, a huge bank account. He made up to $14 million a year on TV, movies, and record albums. So he offered first $50,000 to anyone who could show him the hard proof of extraterrestrial visitation. And over the years, he pumped that up to $500,000. And by the early 70s, he was so frustrated, and he made so much money, he had money to burn, practically. He offered $1 million to anyone who can show me the proof. And this is where Nixon, I think, finally caved in and decided to show him. Nixon was involved in the Watergate scandal in 1972 and 3. And his Watergate burglars who worked for him went to jail, and they were threatening to talk, and they needed hush money. And on the Watergate tapes, Nixon bugged his own Oval Office. He can be heard in January of 73, anguished over how he's going to raise this hush money. But a few weeks after the Jackie Gleason affair in February of 73, Nixon's calm as can be and says, oh, well, I know where we can get that. We can get our hands on that. It's no problem. So here is Nixon, desperate for money. He needs at least $1 million. And Jackie's got this offer of $1 million who will, for anyone who will show him the proof of extraterrestrials visiting our planet. So it doesn't take a genius to see that 2 and 2 equals 4 here. And in fact, Mr. Nixon shared a lawyer with Jackie Gleason named Herbert Kalmbach. Kalmbach went to jail for handing out large sums of cash to Watergate figures to keep them hushed up. So everything fits together here for why Nixon would violate some national security codes by letting a comedian, a civilian with no clearance whatsoever from the military or the government, into a Homestead Air Force Base laboratory and look over the evidence for aliens. It's all because Nixon said so, and he won re-election in 72 by a landslide. He was super popular, and his word was law. They called him King Richard, and he did whatever he felt like doing.
The book's about the Nixon-Gleason alien encounter. So can you just talk us through what is supposed to have happened? What do you think happened?
Right. One night, Jackie Gleason came home near midnight while he was hosting his own celebrity golf tournament, and was ashen and haggard and just wiped out emotionally. This is according to his wife at the time. And she said, where have you been? And Jackie blurted out the truth. I've been with President Nixon to an Air Force base. He showed me the evidence, dead aliens. He said, we went into a laboratory and he showed me these 4 dead aliens stretched out on 4 examining tables. It was like a kind of scientific morgue or laboratory, an examining room maybe for troops normally, but they had these alien bodies that were being examined about 2 to 3 feet at most, dwarfish looking. They had big ears and big eyes, according to what Jackie told his wife, who recalled it all in 3 separate media interviews, one in 1974 when she had separated from Jackie. And she said when this hit the press in 74, Jackie hit the roof and was very upset and called her up and chewed her out and told her to keep her mouth shut on this issue. And she did for 9 years. But in 1983, she decided, I'm long divorced from Jackie. I'm going to write my own tell-all book about what he did in private. So she wrote an article, a 1-page article for the National Enquirer, a tabloid extremely interested in UFO stories, and it was printed. And again, she told the whole story that she could remember, that Jackie came home one night and was thundering about what Nixon had showed him. It made him angry because he knew the government was hiding the truth from the people. And that when he got home, he was very upset and had difficulty working. He didn't work in movies for years. from that February 19th, 1973 event at Homestead Air Force Base, just south of Miami, and that Jackie smoked and drank more than usual and had trouble sleeping, and his mood swings would change in the days and weeks after this event, that he would suddenly be giddy with excitement because he, above all other citizens, got to see the truth from the most powerful man in America, Richard Nixon. And he was all excited like a little boy that I finally got to see what I wanted to see my whole life. And then he would swing back to being very angry at the government for ridiculing people, dismissing UFO stories, and pretending like we're not being visited when we have the hard proof that we are. So Beverly wrote this, and it was printed in the Inquirer, and Jackie blew up again. He was very angry, told her to keep her mouth shut, don't talk about this again. And he died 4 years later, apparently without confessing publicly this story. Now, it's come out that Jackie told a few friends who had nothing to do with UFOs, but they asked him about this story in the Inquirer. Your ex-wife says you saw aliens. And Jackie would say, all I can tell you is Nixon showed me the proof. And that's all he would say to a few friends. And then in 2003, Beverly Gleason popped up again, gave another interview, and simply reiterated everything she had said before. She did not retract the story. She said, I told the truth before. This is what happened to me. This is what Jackie told me. And she did not back down whatsoever. So we have those three stories. And I put together a lot of circumstantial evidence to show that it could well be true. I believe that it did happen pretty much as Beverly wrote about, and what Jackie said he saw and said in private to a few friends. Now, it's another shocking episode. You know, we don't expect our presidents to be aware of aliens in an Air Force base, but Nixon went in and out of Homestead Air Force Base like 50 times during his presidency. He was there a lot. So it hangs together. He was with Jackie Gleason that very afternoon, Monday, February 19th, 1973. Nixon arrived at Jackie's celebrity golf tournament in a helicopter. And I think he sent that same helicopter back to the golf course. It was right behind Jackie's home. Picked up Jackie and took him to Homestead Air Force Base, and then brought him right back afterwards in that helicopter. And that's why Jackie staggered on home and collapsed in a chair and told his wife everything. He was really overcome with emotion. It was his lifelong dream, and he finally got what he wanted.
I heard a story that it was Nixon turned up at Gleason's house in a car all by himself and drove to that airbase, but that can't be right, can it?
Because that's not true. That's one of the things I was telling you about, that the story's been a little gummed up with creative embellishment by people who were not there and did not actually speak to Jackie. It would be almost impossible. Nixon lived about 35, 40 miles away from Jackie's home in Lauderhill, Florida, on that golf course. Nixon stayed in Key Biscayne on a beachfront home he had there, and would take a helipad chopper right behind his house to and from Homestead. It took about 15, 20 minutes to go to and from Homestead Air Force Base, where Air Force One would be parked. But he certainly did not drive at night 35 miles in the dark by himself. No Secret Service. It's just ludicrous. And then he would have had to have driven about 45 miles from Jackie's house down to Homestead in the dark. The two of them were known to sip a little booze in the evening, not a lot. They were both said to be pretty bad drivers, Nixon and Gleason. So that story is simply not true. The helicopter would have been very easily undertaken and much simpler in a kind of luxury lifestyle that the two were accustomed to. So I think once the meeting was over, according to Beverly Gleason, Jackie was sworn to secrecy, promptly broke that oath as soon as he got home. And that Nixon went back to his home in Key Biscayne. And according to his presidential records, he left the next morning to fly north. Now, according to those records, everything is kept quite succinctly about what he did that day. And then it says up to 8:30 p.m., there's a file or a page has been removed from this file that the public is not allowed to see what Richard Nixon was doing that night. Also, very, very suspicious. He just happened to have removed this page, so we can't check his actions for that night. So it all fits together that Nixon and Gleason were friends, golfing buddies. They knew where each other lived. They had met earlier in the day on that golf course behind Jackie's house, and that Nixon removed a page from his records, and that Beverly Gleason gave us the lowdown.
I suppose if Nixon was going to go to that airbase and show Gleason these things, he'd have to give advance warning, wouldn't he? The Secret Service would have to get organized. The base would have to be expecting the president.
I think that, that could well be happening as of 8:30. I think Nixon got on the phone, called Jackie, said something to the effect of, stand by, I'm sending a helicopter over for you, and I'll meet you at Homestead Air Force Base. And I think that was done quite efficiently, and that Nixon probably took along a Secret Service guard or two. One man who was on that trip was named Art Godfrey. He was a Secret Service agent, and it was his birthday a week earlier. And about a week after the Jackie Gleason encounter with Nixon, it was Jackie's birthday. So what would you get these two men who are pretty close to you for their birthday? Something that money just can't buy. It's maybe a coincidence, but both men were right there with Nixon that very day. And so they had birthdays around that time. And, it would be the biggest shock of their lives that they'd always remember and appreciate, almost like a gift.
And the ETs that Gleason described are different to the ones that are described that Eisenhower met on the runway.
Right. These were much smaller and kind of creepy looking. They match exactly what witnesses described at a 1955 Hopkinsville, Kentucky extraterrestrial encounter, in which this farm family named the Sutton family said they encountered one night that they were under attack by these creatures, but they really didn't do very much to the family. And the family tried shooting back at them, and their bullets had no effect whatsoever. They were said to have been little dwarfish things, about 2.5 feet tall, with big bug eyes and pointy ears, exactly what Jackie said he saw. But they were not the human-like beings, nor were they the big-headed little grays that we hear about so much in the media and from people who have felt they've been abducted. And those are the kind that crash-landed and were pulled out of a damaged disc in my hometown of Cape Girardeau, Missouri, in 1941. So there's three different races right there. And so if this Don Phillips can be believed, a secret document was shown to him that indicated up to a dozen races are visiting here. So I guess there's plenty to pick from if you're examining some in a laboratory in Homestead Air Force Base, which, by the way, was destroyed in the early 1990s, I think it was, by a hurricane and had to be rebuilt.
So did Jackie Gleason say that he was told where these bodies came from, or was it he was just shown them?
He was just shown them. Now, Beverly Gleason may not have told everything that she learned in her article. She may have put things that seemed the most believable and fit with what the Enquirer wanted, but she wrote the article herself, and she did not say, nor did she say in the two other interviews. So it's possible Gleason was not told the name of the race or where they came from. There was an online story of a man who wrote in and said that he was aware that Nixon and Gleason did indeed go to Homestead Air Force Base. He must have been there around the time, because this source said Nixon showed Gleason the bodies, and then they went over to a hangar where there was a silver craft, and it was sort of alive and being held down by cables. It was up in the air within the airplane hangar. And that Jackie was shown this also. And he said, the source for writing this said that you can even see the hangar from the highway that goes by the airbase. So that's an interesting level of detail, although we have to remember anyone could say anything on the internet, and sometimes they do creatively. It's a level of detail that I find most intriguing and possible.
And you say also that perhaps these bodies and craft were moved around from different base to base for different specialists to examine them?
Yeah, there's a British author, very famous, named Timothy Good, who wrote a book and said that he was informed by American military source that they do move these bodies from lab to lab, base to base, to get different opinions from different doctors, different scientists, and to make sure the media doesn't find out, or local citizens, and to kind of play almost like a shell game with them and learn as much as possible. I think the main base for this would be Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio, which is long rumored to have held bodies and craft that have crashed and are held in a metallurgical lab where it's being examined, if not reverse engineered, to find out what's in it and how they fly. There's so many stories pointing to that Dayton, Ohio air base that I got to believe it's true. Even former Senator Barry Goldwater, a candidate for president, said he heard all the rumors. He felt that it was likely true, and he would try asking about it. And he never found out a whole lot, but Goldwater once was in the Air Force, I believe, and he wanted the truth as an open-minded private citizen, just kind of like Jackie. Barry Goldwater had a lot of ham radios in his house, and Jackie had like over 30, according to his stepson, that in the upstairs bedroom of his Lauderhill, Florida home, Jackie would try operating all of these ham radios and try to make contact with goodness knows who, probably with aliens or something on his own. I don't know if he had any success or not, but Jackie wanted desperately to know every last detail about aliens.
Now, you also talk about Gordon Cooper in the book, and he was an astronaut, and he had all sorts of things to say, didn't he?
Right. He had an encounter with some craft that he could not explain, some discs, when he was in Germany flying for the Air Force. When he went back to Edwards Air Force Base, he said in like 55, he sent a team out to record some material with a camera crew, video camera, or film camera in those days. And while they were out there, they filmed this circular disc that came down. Now, Gordon Cooper wasn't with them at the time. The disc came down, a silver spaceship out of the sky, landed peacefully, quietly, and after a little bit, it took off, shot up into the sky and took off at an astounding rate. Well, the camera crew recorded this and showed it to Gordon Cooper, and he saw it, and they said they sent it to the Pentagon and never heard back from this. And further, Gordon Cooper heard UFO stories from other people, including a landing of some kind in Florida. And I include that in the book and how that might be related to what Jackie saw. And Gordon Cooper was a hardcore Freemason. And as it turns out, so was Jackie. So naturally, Gordon Cooper was there that day when Nixon arrived at the celebrity golf tournament. You can see Gordon Cooper's name in the list of celebrities. He and Jackie were apparently fairly close and had a lot of UFO secrets to share with each other. So they both knew Nixon. Gordon Cooper knew Nixon and once gave Nixon a private tour of the NASA headquarters in Houston, Texas, one time in 1968. So they all three sort of hung together and were there that day, February 19th, exactly 19 years after Eisenhower's encounter in California.
And did Gordon Cooper see something when he was in orbit?
He said that he did. I think he said it was greenish or turned red while he was in orbit around the planet Earth. And I think he tried describing this, and NBC News cut him off. Somebody cut off NBC News feed about what he was seeing, an unusual craft while he was orbiting the Earth in 62, I think it was. So he had plenty of experience in this subject and had to have been of great interest to an Air Force pilot in those days. And it's just a complete natural that he would bond with Jackie Gleason.
It seems like there could be a lot of people who know about this stuff. Do you think there are people who have this access who are just kind of, you know, they don't really care that much and they're not fussed about telling the world about it? That's just part of their job.
There haven't been too many leaks. This recent one by David Grush seems to be a legit crack in the dike or the dam. Let's hope there's a floodwater of leaks and confessions from government people in the aftermath of this. But occasionally you get dribs and drabs of the story from various people who've decided, I'm retired, what's the worst they can do to me? But when you're in the service, you do sign these binding agreements to keep your mouth shut, and they'll take away your pension and your health care, might even put you in the brig or in prison if you violate the secrecy oath. This one test pilot who came forward in around 1981 to talk about the Eisenhower encounter did so only after he learned he was the last man left alive and he didn't want the story to die out, and he refused to have his real name printed. It was kept anonymous. So I think we might see more of that situation if people want to step forward and speak anonymously. I sure would like to see a file leaked, some documents, still photos, some film footage. There was apparently film footage taken during the Eisenhower encounter 54. That is the allegation within a couple of sources that Eisenhower had film cameramen standing by to record the event. Some of the footage was in color and some was black and white. And when the aliens put on their air show, they got a little too close to one of the cameras and broke down the black and white footage because their technology clashed with the camera's technology. So that footage ends abruptly. I'd sure like to see that leaked and someone speak out publicly and say, yes, we did make contact. The truth is we didn't think people could handle it then. Eisenhower eventually ordered it hushed up. And the government's been sitting on this story ever since. It's possible that someone from the government could deliberately leak this, you know, and hack into a file and deliberately let it out someday. We'll just see.
And talking of films, you have a whole thing about Robert Emmenegger, and that's a fascinating story.
Yes, it is. Apparently there was a somewhat accidental landing by some extraterrestrials at Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico in May of 1971 during Nixon's first term. And that Air Force Base officials came out to this ship and they said that alien beings, friendly human-like ones, a little strange looking, stepped out of the ship and spoke in English and they communicated. They even went into a building on the base where they mentioned that their ship had been having mechanical difficulties and contact was made, and that this was somewhat hushed up by the government, but there was film footage of this event by a camera crew that happened to be filming at the time some jet planes that were in the area. So Robert Emmenegger was a filmmaker, commercial advertising agent, and co-producer of a film that he was going to do on extraterrestrials visiting Earth. And he did make this film along with a partner, but they were promised this footage that was taken of the Holloman landing of May 1971. And I looked it up in the Nixon records on that particular day given. And Nixon had a rather odd routine that day and sent one of his top aides into a room in the White House to speak on a phone that was most unusual. There was repeated contact back and forth with somebody that day. Nixon knew that some of his phones were tapped and that the rooms in the White House were tapped even by himself. He bugged his own offices because he wanted to record everything that was going on to have supposedly to create accurate memoirs. So I put in my book the story of the Emmenegger film footage, which was promised to him for a movie called UFOs Past and Present. And at the last minute, the film was pulled back. They reneged on the deal. The Air Force didn't let him have it after all. So it's enticing, and the story just came up not long ago in which Emmenegger's co-star, or rather his co-producer, said that I did finally get a look at that footage. Emmenegger did not ever get to see it, but I did. And he said, I saw the alien landing for myself in this footage. I don't know why Emmenegger was not shown. I don't know why it was pulled back, but I think they felt during the Watergate scandal, this would just be another big secret uncovered that would be embarrassing to the Nixon administration. So they decided to pull the plug on that one.
And Emenegger and his co-producer, they did have a background in government, didn't they? It was almost like they had the right connections in the Air Force.
Mr. Emenegger, I think it was, knew H.R. Haldeman, Nixon's top aide. They went to college and were together there and were both advertising executives to start with. So they knew who to go to if the Nixon administration wanted to leak this footage and start gently disclosing things as of the early 70s to help make Nixon look like a great figure in history. And they could have used that footage from 1971 to say, look who aliens decided to land and speak to during my administration, Nixon's first term. But as I've mentioned, they put the kibosh on that and it never really came out with that footage. Mr. Emenegger used different footage of a jet plane landing in the distance, and it shows it just as this blurry light at an Air Force base. And they use a kind of, supposing this happened in the narration of the film, if you ever get a chance to see it, but that's not the actual footage in the movie.
And is it that his co-producer secretly made a copy and offered it to Spielberg? Or was that something else?
That is a rumor, and I cannot confirm it. But there's a story out that once the government came back several years during the Reagan administration and said, we'd like to show you this footage that we promised you the first time from the 71 landing, and maybe you could use it in another film. Now, the rumor, and I can't back it up at all, I admit, is that Emenegger set a little trap for his military contact, invited him to his home where he would show the footage on a projector. But in the background, supposedly, Emenegger hid a camera and recorded the footage, recorded the meeting, and that the military representative had no idea. Now, if that rumor is true, then where is Emenegger's footage? And why has he never spoken up about this? So the rumor could be false, or it could be true, and Emenegger is very frightened of coming forward that he did a naughty thing and recorded secretly some classified stuff without be giving permission. So either way, it's an interesting story, and I include it in my book, but I make sure to point out repeatedly that that is an unsupported conjecture or a rumor.
Well, it's been great talking to you. We've been talking about the book, Nixon, Gleason Alien Encounter, an investigation into Nixon's secret meetings with extraterrestrials. And we talked to you about another one of your books, MO41, The Bombshell Before Roswell. They're both on Amazon, aren't they?
That's correct. You can also get my Eisenhower book on audio. They did a very fine job at Tantor.com. And my new book is out in that manner, or will be out on audiobook by Tantor within a month or so. So that's a good way, because they've got an excellent reader who narrates the story. They do a very fine job with that. And I hope to have more books in the future. Like I say, my MO41 book, I'll put it all together with some new tidbits for release this fall in time for Christmas. Maybe we can do another show more at length on that one.
Yeah, that'd be great. And do you have a website?
I do. I don't do a whole lot to it, I admit. I need to work on that. It's called mo41.info. You can also find me on Facebook and various pages. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Tribal. So I try to do all the social media, and I enjoy hearing other people's stories. Occasionally, I get a little tidbit of information on the Cape Girardeau affair, since I was a resident there, and I was born and raised and lived there about 34 years. So I don't live there right now, but occasionally I go back and visit. And it's a lovely part of the country and pretty safe there. So I recommend that everyone get my books and read them. I know that sounds a little self-absorbed, but to learn all the facts and how this isn't just some sort of flimsy theory that we put together, or I put together, as many facts and the resources and sources that I used as possible and I think folks will find it quite compelling.
Well, thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me on. It was my pleasure, sir.
And that was an interview with Paul Blake Smith about his book, The Nixon-Gleason Alien Encounter, an investigation into Nixon's secret airbase meetings to view extraterrestrials. If you want to hear the rest of this amazing interview, you'll need to sign up to Patreon for the extended episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. If you join the $2 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. If you join the $5 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called Past Lives Podcast. There are over 270 episodes. On the Past Lives Podcast, I look into evidence of the afterlife, such as near-death experiences, children with past life memories, mediumship, deathbed visions, and other phenomena. I also release an extra episode of the Past Lives Podcast every Thursday that's called Paranormal Stories, and that also has UFO information. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. My Instagram is the Past Lives Podcast with an underscore between each word. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening. The Eckhart's cross line when they had that phone call?
That's an amazing story, too. The Eckhart family of Oklahoma was on their phone and got mixed up, and they ended up.